When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome back to In the Pink with me, Natalie Pinkham, and Bose, helping you stay connected through these very difficult times, these very uncertain times. It has never been more important to stay connected, keep talking, keep sharing and empathising, relating, and just being human beings, keeping the conversation flowing. And I hope you've enjoyed the podcast so far, this series. Anthony Gogo's life story is incredible, and he's still only 32. Can't believe how much he's been through, and hopefully how much he's got to look forward to in his future. Sticking with the theme of boxing, my next guest is somebody who's been at Sky Sports for nearly three decades. He is one of the very best in the business. Adam Smith is the lead commentator, in fact, head of Sky Sports Boxing. And he explains to me how he started out in his career. So great to give some advice and tips to any aspiring commentators and broadcasters. He also talks about the importance of boxing in helping people out of difficult times. He looks ahead to AJ Fury, the fight that we are promised this year in 2021. And we just have an all-round great chat. And it's very uplifting talking to someone like Adam because he's a very positive person. And I hope you find his words inspiring today. So here he is, Adam Smith on In the Pink. Well, hello, and how are you? Most importantly, are you coping with homeschooling?
I think that's the huge question on everyone's mind at the moment. I mean, the first thing, Natalie, is that we're healthy and safe, and I think that's the most important thing. And it's just been such a traumatic year, hasn't it? And I think that that's the only thing that matters at the minute, that, you know, that we get out the other side, that we deal with all the things that have been thrown at us. And that, as I said, everybody tries to keep us as healthy and safe as possible. We all know people who have been affected by, you know, by the pandemic, and it's been terrible. Let's not mince our words. It's been a horrendous few months for everybody. And, you know, very difficult working situation. And obviously, you know, a different setup in people's homes. You know, people are working obviously much more, these Zoom calls, and the homeschooling. I mean, look, first time around, it was a complete shambles. I mean, it was, you know, trying to get sort of, and my wife did so much of it, but it was, you know, we've got three different kids, three different personalities, three different schools, you know, three different ethics, three different ideas of what they should and shouldn't be doing. And, you know, that's what the teachers are there for. That's what the schools are there for. And it was hard first time around. This time around, I think it, you know, I think everyone's learned a bit. I think it's slightly more structured, he says, as, you know, Tilly wanders around in her pajamas still, and, you know, Chesame's in one room, and Oscar's, you know, trying to, they're all getting on with it. And I think that's what we've got to do. We're trying to, you know, keep them physical as well, trying to get them out, you know, do the odd walk or run or something. It's difficult. They want to be with their mates. They want to be at school, and, you know, and they need, especially the teenagers in the house, the two of them need real sort of tuition as well. So it's tough, but, yeah, Joe's doing a great job, and I try and help out, when I can, and, you know, escape with work stuff at other times. And there's a lot going on, isn't there?
I spy a little man cave there. I think that this is exactly where you escape to. You say, yeah, I mean, I need to do some work.
There's to be honest, there's no real escape in our house with the five of us. But it's normally sort of getting out literally for that sort of one bit of exercise a day and taking a little bit more time maybe and calling Eddie a lot and that sort of thing. But yeah, look, I mean, it's we're all trying to muck in. I think what I have found over the last year is that, you know, I'm really useless at DIY. I'm pretty rubbish around the house generally. But what I have tried is cooking, and I could cook a few things. But I opened my bakery in the sort of spring summer last year, and I went through Lorraine Pascal's sort of recipe books. I just found them up on the shelf, and I opened them up, and I literally did every single cake under the sun, every pudding from lemon drizzle cake to chocolate mousse to, you know, Victoria sponges. I had rainbow cakes going on, and sort of every weekend I opened the bakery, and each one of the kids did a different one with me, and that was really good fun. So we did that, and then everyone's now saying, come on, where are the cakes again? And I'm like, I don't want to see another bag of flour, another sugar, whatever. So I've tried to do a bit of the sort of savory cooking as well. So, you know, I've done a few things. I'm no good, but there's no one goes hungry. There's always huge quantities, you know, sort of seeping out the floorboards and that sort of thing. We can feed the road. So that's my sort of contribution. But I'm pretty useless in that department. I think I'm better in the sports world.
That's amazing, though. I mean, do you feel in a way that you can see the benefits to being able to be present for your kids, reconnecting with them when, you know, normally you are flying all over the world? You know, we're always so busy with our work lives that, you know, I'm not saying you have ever neglected your kids, but this is a chance to press the reset button to an extent, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. It's, you know, I think I'm a pretty positive, you know, glass sort of three quarters full type person. And I like to look at the sort of situation and say, like, what can we get out of this? And I think, yeah, I think the closeness to the kids is important. I think they also need, you know, their space too. But, you know, you see them and all the devices and the technology now, and they want to be on their phones and their iPads, whatever. I think it's really important to sort of keep trying to get them around the table for dinners and, you know, go for little walks with them and things like that. And just, you know, be a dad, be a mum, be a parent. And you're right, you know, I've spent nearly 27 years at Sky, and I've been all over the world and, you know, in the office and out on shoots and at meetings and whatever. So sometimes you get some really good quality time, and other times you're away for a week or two. It's just like you are with the Formula One. I mean, it's crazy, the itinerary. And I think that whether we ever go back to that sort of normal world where we all are sort of, you know, I don't know, going to America 6-7 times a year, or whether that'll all sort of calm down a bit, I don't know. There'll be a better balance, I think, going forwards. And I think that what we've learned is that, you know, that it's very important that, you know, you are around for your kids. You know, they grow so quickly. You know, 5 minutes ago, my eldest was a baby, and now she's nearly 15. You know, it goes like that. And I think that I'm really pleased this year that I've been around a bit more. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you miss those parents' evenings, those sports days. And I've tried to be around as much as possible and tried to sort of be, you know, be there on the sort of really important days, whatever. And this feels like there's no real sort of set important days at the moment. It's more sort of just being around and just being there. And it's really weird, actually, if I'm sort of, I don't know, go for a drive for a day or go for somewhere or whatever and go and do something, especially when lockdown was over and we had that sort of freedom and we went back out again. And it was like I was missing them, actually. And I was getting in, you know, after a few hours away from them, and they were like, where have you been? You know, so, you know, it's become sort of the new norm, but it's a good balance. I've got a great boss, and it's the understanding, I think, that there are pressures with the homeschooling, with the family environment, as well as with the working environment, which is totally different and totally strange. And we had this sort of 4 or 5 months at the end of 2020, which was like, you know, nothing we'd ever seen before work-wise. So that was a whole new learning sort of education. And I think, look, I think this is going to go on for a number of weeks, even months. There are vaccines now. We see a light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to be a while before we get sort of, you know, crowds back, or even sort of arenas, stadiums. Of course, it's going to be months, I think. But, you know, we'll look back at this period and hopefully we'll all have learned something. But, you know, mentally and physically, that's just so important for everybody's health, I think. And, you know, I've tried to do a little bit of running, a little bit of time with the kids, a bit of balance, which I think maybe in our world, it's hard to find sometimes. So, yeah, that's the positives to take out of it. The negatives, obviously, is seeing everybody suffer and ill. And that's just horrendous. And, you know, the quicker that's that gets better, and the NHS have been incredible. And, you know, once we sort of, I don't know, have a better situation with more of the elderly and the really at-risk vaccinated, then obviously it's going to improve.
In the Pink and Bows want to support you in whatever way we can during these uncertain and constantly evolving times. So we're giving away more noise-cancelling headphones to bring some added calm to your life. To win the headphones, just tag in the three friends you're most looking forward to reconnecting with once lockdown is fully lifted. Always include the hashtag Bows, and those headphones could be yours. Good luck and stay connected.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about those 27 years at Sky. Cover them off in one podcast. Let's cast our mind right back to your childhood and when you first kind of caught the bug, if you like. What was it about pugilism that sort of caught your imagination and essentially took you on a career path that has spanned nearly three decades?
It's a strange one, really. I mean, I wasn't necessarily just a boxing fan when I was a kid. I was a massive sports fan. I used to watch everything. Football, big Liverpool fan, as you can see, cricket, darts, snooker, the horse racing, the Formula One, the tennis is a big passion of mine. You name it, I watched it when I was a kid, and I still do. That's my real love. It's a passion of sport. And, you know, I sort of tripped into boxing. I mean, I think I probably wanted to be a football commentator, first of all, or a racing commentator. My late grandfather, his best friend was a guy called Peter Bromley, who was a wonderful horse racing commentator. And I was lucky enough to go into his commentary booth at Ascot one time. And he had these big field binoculars. I was about 12 or 13. And, you know, I couldn't believe he was sort of calling these 25 horses that, you know, and he had sort of one little sheet to look at. And then he was just on the field binoculars. It was wonderful. And it just, that was a big inspiration. But I think, you know, even earlier than that, sort of, I remember like maybe 10, 11, I was turning the TV down and commentating or doing my own sort of reports on little dictaphones before my voice had broken. And, you know, I drive my parents mad, you know, we just, you know, just continuous chat, just talking about sport. I can still remember doing the 1983 Grand National, you know, Corbière on the far side, here comes Grease Paint, hello Dandy between horses, and they're coming to the elbow, and all of that. And I did that before my voice had broken. So it was like, that's how long I wanted to do it. And I was educated in a very lucky in a big private school, St. Paul's, really good school. And they all went off to, you know, George Osborne was in my year. They went off to sort of, you know, run the country or, you know, become captains of industry. And I think I was the only person there who wanted to be a TV commentator. And, you know, I remember going around the careers fairs and there was accountancy and, you know, and medical, you know, medicine stuff and law and all this. I was just thinking, I don't want any of this. I want to be on TV and I want to do TV sport. And then I thought, well, maybe that's not right. And I did a lot of drama and I thought maybe I should act and I wasn't very good at it. So I didn't know. I did theatre studies at university. But, you know, it was like people were pushing me to go into sort of maybe retail or whatever. My father had been in retail and has been all his life. So, but I was like, no, I want to do this. And I ended up going, between school and university, I had a gap year and I worked at TVAM and I was a copy runner through the night. And I sort of just handed scripts to Mike Morris, Richard Keys, Lorraine Kelly, Ulrika Johnson. And, you know, did that for a while. Then I was going to go back as a graduate trainee, but TVAM lost their franchise to GMTV. So I ended up after university thinking, what am I going to do? And I went out to Washington through a contact and I worked at CNN. In Washington for a few months as an intern in the political department. I worked on the Crossfire show, which was the Democrats and the Republicans. So I really got into sort of the news. And then that took me back to London to NBC, ironically, and then ITN. And I worked on the home news desk at ITN for a few months. And I was sort of passionate about news. There was all sorts happening. The Labour leader, John Smith, died. That was a huge story. The Mullah Kintyre helicopter crash when I was on the desk. There was all sorts of dramas that you sort of had to, you know, my good friend Terry Lloyd, unfortunately, got killed out in the crossfire in the Gulf War. And I was like, there was so much that was happening. Dave Kane, my cameraman then, became my cameraman at Sky many years later. But it was like, I made some really good contacts in the news world and I thought maybe this is my future, but I just thought there was something niggling at me saying I've got to keep sport going. And at that point, I was, as I said, a huge sports fan of everything. Boxing had become a big passion of mine. I fell in love with it, I think, with Hagler Hearns. I cried. I loved I love Tommy Hearns, and I cried when he lost to Hagler. I was about 13. And at the same time, I also really admire Barry McGuigan. And I sneaked into his world title fight at Loftus Road against Eusebio Pedroza. So I was about 13. And I just thought, oh, I thought Barry was unbelievable. The whole sort of United Ireland and the fans and the passion. I just really enjoyed it. I just thought absolutely fantastic. And so I sort of hooked into boxing, but it was one of many things. And then I applied to into sports television. I was lucky enough that Vic Wakeling took me on at Sky Sports as a junior. And he said to me in the interview, and he interviewed me, and he said, what do you really like? And I said, well, you know, I don't know. He said, I have a listen to some of these things. So I had my dictaphone or my tapes, my old commentaries. I said, well, this is how long I've wanted to commentate. So I'd like to commentate. And I said, what sports? I said, well, I like all sports. I said, one of them is boxing. And I told him the story about when I was at CNN, I went to work in Evander Holyfield's camp and went to the Riddick Bowe fight. And it was the second fight in Vegas. They had a great first fight. And the second fight in Vegas was outdoors at Caesar's Palace. And it was known because some lunatic came in on a sort of propeller. He was called the Fan Man. Look back at the tapes. He crashed into just around ringside. And it was just a madman. I mean, I think he ended up back at Buckingham Palace a week later or something. And then, I mean, he was a crazy guy. Anyway, I just thought, this is mad. And we're sitting there, and this thing came over our heads and it smashed into, you know, just the canopy at ringside. And the whole fight was held up. And the fight then changed because Holyfield was fitter and came on down the stretch. And I thought, this is mad. This is like a theater. Like, this whole sort of sport is crazy. And I thought, I like this. You know, it's my love of theater, and it's my love of sport, and it's my love of unpredictability. And then it's like this, it's so confusing as well. So many belts, so many titles, so many this, so many that. And it's like, I just sort of loved it. So I said to Vic, and he said, right, go and work in the boxing team. And at that point, it was Gary Norman was presenting and producing. It was just a one-man show. And I went and helped him out. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. And Barry McGuigan, ironically, my two real heroes when I was growing up, apart from all the Liverpool players, like Kenny Dalglish, and when I got to work with Kelly, that was like, oh, my God. But my real heroes were David Gower, the cricketer, and Barry McGuigan. And I worked on the boxing, and I also worked on a show called One to One. And the producer, Neil Alton, said to me, the first guy I want you to call is David Gower, and here's his number. So, like, within the first couple of weeks of Sky, I was, like, calling my hero up going, is David there, please? Yes, speaking. Hi. It's Adam Smith. I work at Sky. But Adam, how are you? Nice to speak to you. And I'm like, oh, my God, this isn't happening. And I've still got that. Whenever I see David around, it's just like, I've still got actually on my wall a massive sort of tribute to him. And the other hero was Barry McGuigan. And a year into Sky, Barry signed this big deal. He was going to come and be our analyst. And my job was to take him around the UK to different gyms for a year and produce him doing pieces. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. So I was a sports fan. I was rubbish at all sports. I mean, really bad, but I'm really good at watching them. And I think that's what I always wanted to do. And I still do, you know, I've got the cricket on, I've got the tennis on, the darts, whatever it is. So I say boxing is my business, and I love it. And I love the whole drama of it. But I do love sport across the field as just something that is just in me. And, you know, long may that continue. Well, it will always continue.
I mean, I have to say, the ability to commentate on live sport is almost beyond me. When I hear you or Crofty, or there are a number of commentators, I think Formula One's must be so difficult to commentate on, particularly all the helmet designs are changing all the time, just to try and keep track of who's who. But the energy that you give it, and the way you're able to bring that sport alive and act as the conduit between the sporting event and the fans, you're doing something that I think very few can do. There are obviously plenty that want to do it, though. And I feel at the moment that it's a particularly tough time for young people who are trying to break in. I mean, obviously, it's a very different world now to 27, 30 years ago. Have you got advice for aspiring commentators, knowing the current climate as you do, but also boxing and indeed all sports at Sky and other broadcasters?
Absolutely. And I agree with you with Crofty. You know, I I actually met him properly up at the darts at the palace, and it was funny. He absolutely adores the arrows, and so and he's been doing it for quite a long time. And it was my first sort of stint helping out, and so I was the new boy, and which is a bit weird because I've been at Sky for so long, but you know, and I was working, it was great, with Wayne Mardell and John Part and Mark Webster and Laura Turner and all these great names. And but, you know, Crofty and I were just like, it's so mad, isn't it, that I've come from the Formula One world, which is totally different to darts. You come from the boxing world, and we sort of meet in here. And I think commentary, yeah, it's about storytelling. And I think it's about a lot of preparation. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that enable you to pick up that mic in the first place. And I'm absolutely a stickler for, you know, for that sort of, you know, you have to be totally on top of, you know, knowledge wise. You have to sort of, you know, really work hard before you get anywhere near the event. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. You can call people up. You can obviously, now with the social world as it is, the internet and everything, there's so much you can, you know, research you can do. So I think that's really important. But I think probably the one thing that you need more than anything is passion. And that's what I feel. I mean, I've heard a lot of great commentators over the years. You know, I guess my idol and my sort of hero within Sky going through the years was Ian Dark. You know, we're still very close. I still think he's the greatest commentator that we've had over the last 20, 30 years. And, you know, he was a football commentator. He was on the radio. He was a brilliant boxing commentator. His light and shade, his levels, his delivery, you know, phenomenal. And he taught me so much working alongside with him and Glenn McCrory and Jim Watt and Bob Mee, our terrific historian and statistician, you know, sort of traveling the world with those guys as a junior reporter, as a young sort of aspiring commentator, was brilliant. Because, of course, as I said, I wanted to be a commentator from when I was a kid. So that's all I wanted to do. And when I walked into Sky, and Vic Wakeley and Mark Sharman said, oh, it's going to take you 10 years to be a commentator. And I said, I'll do it in 5. And I wanted to make sure that's what I ended up doing, because I wanted to do it. And I think that so many people now, you know, I look at my kids and think, what are they going to become? They're going to become what they want to become, what's in there, right? I don't care if they want to become, you know, they want to help out charities, they want to work for the NHS, they want to work in TV, they want to work in banking, they want to, you know, work in a coffee shop, they want to, whatever they want to do, it's got to be in here. And I think that's the important thing. It's got to be inside you, because you and I have been lucky enough to do something that we absolutely love day in, day out. And when there's tough times, like with a pandemic, you know, I remember walking to Madison Square Garden and doing my first unified world title fight between Ibrahimov and Klitschko. And I remember thinking, it wasn't a great fight actually, but I remember thinking, I'm going to the mecca of world boxing for the unified heavyweight title. And you know what? If this all ends tomorrow and I fall down a hole or someone taps me on the shoulder and says, "Ads, that's it, you're done," I will be so grateful and so thankful to the people that have given me these opportunities. Listen, my advice to the kids, and I'm passionate about children, about mentoring young talent. You know, I work very closely with the Sky Scholarship System. You know, I've taken Savannah Marshall through, Daniel Altmaier. I'm very close to Emily Appleton, to Imani Lancicott, to Joe Fraser, to all the sort of current crop of scholars. I love mentoring. I love helping out. And I think that's, I'm in a stage now where that experience, you know, is important for them. I think that, and my key is, if somebody comes to me and says, I really want to be a sports commentator, I'm all over it. I'm like, I want to speak to you. I want to know why. I want to, you know, if they come to me and say, oh, can you get me into Sky? I sort of say, well, what do you want to do? Or if they come to me and say, I really want to be a commentator, listen, that's what I wanted to be. That's what my dream was. I didn't care about making money. I didn't care about, you know, being in the city, wearing suits, all that sort of stuff. I didn't. Actually, I wore suits at Sky a lot, but that was because I just wanted to be smart at work. And I think I just was so lucky to get into Sky Sports at a time where there was 45 people in Sky Sports, you know, 1994 when I walked in, and we could all go into the edit suites and start voicing pieces and start reporting pretty quickly, because there weren't that many of us. And I think it is harder now, but I think the same ethos, the same ethics are there, that if you are dedicated and you're passionate and you really want to do it, you will do it. It will work for you. And it may not be in commentary. It could be in presenting. It could be that you want to, you think you're going to be a presenter and actually you end up being a really high skill producer, or you end up a director of a sport or something. That's your path. Or you end up becoming a vision mixer, or you end up becoming, you know, a great PA or whatever it is. But I think that if you really want to do it, absolutely, you've got to knock down doors. I mean, when I was at ITN, and I was in a job at ITN, freelancer, but I was in a job, and I wanted to get into sports TV, I'm telling you, and my stepmom will vouch for this, you know, my mum's a mad sports fan, my stepmom not so, but my stepmom's a really great businesswoman, and she said, you have got to keep breaking the barriers. You've got to keep knocking. No one's going to just take you on. And I must have written 400 or 500 letters, you know, some of them with tapes, some of them with all those old sort of dictaphone tapes, and begging people. And that was hundreds of rejections. And then, you know, a few people said, well, nothing around, but come in for a chat. And those people I'll never forget. You know, those people are, it was at Radio 2 or Radio 5 at the time, one at Channel 4, one at London Sports Network. These people that couldn't give me a job, but they kept me going. And one of them eventually said, oh, have you tried Vic Wakeling at Sky? And I was like, I didn't really know much about Sky Sports. I think I'd written a letter, but I got a general, and I sort of followed that up, and that got me a lead and in. So I think if you want to do it badly enough, you can do it, and you should. But there's got to be passion.
So true. And no one's ever going to criticize you for banging on their door. Oh, that irritating kid, just go. No, hang on a minute. I'm asking you to do something because I'm passionate about it. No one can ever criticize you for that. Actually, I want to sort of widen that point about sport being a vehicle for social change. I know that you are really passionate about this as well. You've been incredible support to me with Hope and Homes for Children. I know that philanthropic projects really interest you, and you give a lot of your time to it. But can we just talk specifically about boxing now, and the way that boxing can transform lives? And, you know, from your own experience, you know, I've trained down at Fitzroy Lodge, and I see kids in there who would otherwise be out on the streets, you know, potentially getting into trouble and, you know, going down the wrong path in life. I think that's been one of my biggest concerns through this pandemic, is really, where are those kids now when these gyms have shut? What has been your experience of this, and why do you think boxing in particular just manages to do that in a way that even some other sports don't?
I think that's a brilliant question, and I think that's a really important area at this time. And whether it's boxing or whether it's just general sport and keeping fit, it's obviously that health element too. And it's really difficult when you've got kids who want to go and play football, or who want to go and play tennis or gymnastics or whatever your chosen, you know, love or interest is, and they can't really do that at the moment. And that's really hard. And you hope that they're going to get that bug back as soon as they can, you know, physically go, because it's really, you know, that you don't want them sort of just, I don't know, losing themselves on their devices the whole time. There's got to be a balance. Boxing is crucial to this. You know, boxing is fundamentally it's a dangerous sport. Let's not, you know, Formula One's a dangerous sport. Rugby is, there's loads of others, but, you know, boxing is a dangerous sport. You know, I was showing to you earlier a thing that I've got on my wall. It's a reminder to me about the severity of boxing, but also the beauty of it as well. My book, Beautiful Brutality, that I wrote years ago, is exactly that. That's what it is. It can be so incredible a sport to watch, to witness, to be involved in. You know, the fighters themselves, the purest, the nicest, the most accessible sportsmen and women you'll ever get to. I'm really, you know, I'm close to Katie, to AJ, to Tyson Fury, whoever it is, whichever divide, whichever, you know, promotional, you know, they're under, it doesn't matter. Fighters are a breed, and they are just so dedicated as sportsmen and women, the elite ones. And they're just a shining example, really. And you get different characters, and you get ones that have come from different backgrounds, broken homes, you know, all sorts. And, you know, boxing has given them structure, discipline, dedication, a way off the streets. It's, you know, great stories. Richard Riakpor from gang life to absolutely focused now. You know, they take John Harding Jr., take these guys, you know, I mean, these crazy guys we've worked with over the years, the Johnny Tappy is, the Michael Gomez is, is that these guys have just, you know, they've had boxing has just kept them on the straight and narrow. So it's a hugely important thing for fitness as well, whether it's boxer size, keep fit. You know, I like doing the pads, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks, just to sort of, you know, just it's good fitness, but it's also, you know, it just, it controls your aggression. It controls that sort of, you know, oh, I'm really annoyed about something. But actually, instead of doing that, put your phones down and just, you know, get the gloves on and go on the pads, because it's good. It's a great workout. And actually, you know, you feel so much better for it. You don't have to, I wouldn't want to get hit back, but you know, there's the brave people out there that do, but it doesn't have to be that. So you can, you know, you can take boxing as a fitness as well as something that leads to competition. But, you know, but this thing on my wall, it's like, you know, that it's serious. You know, there's something that Joe Frazier wrote, boxing's the only sport you can get your brain shook, your money took, and your name in the Undertaker book. You know, that is the reality of it. You know, the same hand that can write a beautiful poem can knock you out with one punch. That's called poetic justice. Some brilliant stuff. You know, this one here, to me, boxing is like ballet, except there's no music, no choreography, and the dancers hit each other. You know, Paul Truscott used to get on the mic after his fights up in Middlesbrough and say, kids, get off the streets, forget the drugs. It doesn't matter if you do boxing or ballet. It doesn't matter what you do. Just get off and try and do something which is good for you. You know, here, again, if you screw things up in tennis, it's 15 love. If you screw up in boxing, it's your ass. I mean, that's the key. It's not, you don't play at boxing. And I think that...
Does it trouble you, though? You know, the brutality of it. You know, the potential downsides. Does it trouble you at all?
I like to say I'm a lover, not a fighter, Natalie. I'm a, you know, I'll run away from a situation rather than run into it. And I think that I always try and, you know, if there's a situation that's brewing, I try and, you know, like to calm. So for me, it's really strange seeing someone hurt or someone injured or whatever. And I think the way that I deal with it is that this is what they want to do. It's like Spencer Oliver's a prime example of that. I've known him for 25, 30 years. And Spencer, I knew when he was a kid, and all he wanted to do was become a world champion. And he had his career cut short. And every day since then, 22 to what is he, mid 40s now, every day he still says, I would do it all again and twice on Sundays. It's in you. And I think that there's some people who want to be a commentator. There's some people who want to be a doctor, and there's some people who want to be a fighter. Katie Taylor's wanted to be a fighter since she was 11 years old. She used to dress up as a boy. They wouldn't allow it in amateur Irish boxing. You know, she was Kay Taylor. She had her hair up underneath the helmet, all of that sort of stuff. So she, you know, she was an inspiration. And that's why, and you ask her now even, what are you going to do after boxing? No, I'm boxing. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to, you know, be the greatest that's ever laced them up. And I think it's that burning desire, and it goes back to passion again. If you really want to do something, that's what you should do. But going back to your sort of overriding question about the kids and the fact is, it's very difficult. You know, the gyms are shut, the amateur clubs, the grassroots, you know, we didn't get help from the government with money, which I felt was really bad. And it's really good that Anthony Joshua has come out and said he's going to give a load of money to not just to Finchley, to his own club, but to amateur clubs in general, because the amateur and the grassroots is where it all is at. And of course, at the moment, elite sport can carry on. And that's great for us. That's great for the viewers, that's great for some entertainment during these difficult times. And obviously it's great for the sportsmen and women taking part. But don't forget, there's a lot of young out there, a lot of would-be, there's a lot of sort of small hall fighters who can't get out because these shows can't go on because there's no crowds. And that's how they, you know, that's how they need their gate money. And, you know, it's amazing that Eddie's managed and Frank and everyone in the States and Bob and PBC and everyone have managed to get fighting on without gates. That's incredible at that sort of level with the money that's, you know, normally on the table. But even at the sort of, you know, the 500 people or 1,000 people at your call or at a, you know, a leisure centre up in Altrincham or, you know, down in Portsmouth, you know, these are the grassroots. This is the sort of the lifeblood of the sport, always has been. And I think that it's really important that we keep that, keep talking about it, even if we can't do too much at the moment, so that when we do get back to as normal a situation as we can, we haven't forgotten that. And hopefully those kids who have been inspired by the Anthony Joshuas, by the Katie Taylors, by the Savannah Marshalls, by the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tyson Fury's, what a story Tyson Fury is, the way he's come back from his, you know, his problems. And just, you know, you get that in boxing. You know that, I know that. You get these incredible stories, these phenomenal characters who have gone through a lot of bad stuff. And I think it's normal. We all go through difficulties every day. And I think a lot of the fighters are prepared to talk about that. And I think that's what's really great. I think that's why people have gravitated towards Tyson Fury or Anthony Joshua through his difficulties as a kid. And he's come out and now, you know, he has so much respect for other people because of that. And I think that, you know, they are heroes to the kids. And what happened in 2012 in London, you know, led us towards Froch Groves with 80,000 at Wembley. Mayweather Pacquiao was made. Women's boxing, it got, you know, it's boom time for women's boxing, and some of the big best fights have been made. And I think that now boxing's in a great place. You know, we hope that Joshua and Fury meet in 2021. That will be a real pinnacle for us, and I think it will be fantastic if that happens at a time when the gyms are reopen and the kids can then sort of get inspired again. So I think, yeah, it's really important as a sport for not just for kids who are in trouble on the streets or who are thinking of going the wrong way or whatever, but for everybody. You know, it's a great fitness. And I think that it's something that, you know, it can improve you mentally and physically, boxing. So you don't have to get hit. If you want to go down that route, that's up to you. That's your choice. And it's, if you've got that passion, you go for it. But if you haven't, and you just want to be, you know, a fit human being, a fit, you know, young adult, great. That's brilliant. Boxing can work as well.
But specifically, what is it about boxing that can teach discipline? Mm-hmm.
I think that it is, I think there's a number of things. Firstly, a gym builds camaraderie, a team spirit. I think that's really important. You know, in all of our works, jobs, parts of Sky, we are teams. No one, and I think that's the great thing about Sky, is that there's no one standout person. You know, you're only as good as the team that's around you, and the team is what's important. So I think when you're in a gym, whether it's, you know, Fitzroy Lodge or Repton, a top club, or whether it's one of the smaller ones, you've got buddies. And I think buddies are really important at the moment when you can't actually have that physical time with your friends. You know, you've got to reach out to people. And I think that people will strive for that as soon as this pandemic is sort of through, getting that sort of, you know, unity back, getting that sort of, you know, the club, you know, spirit. And I think that's really important, that you'll be working with others towards a goal, fighters at different weights, you know, or look at Team GB, you know, going to Tokyo, you know, or the Irish team. It's fantastic, that sort of camaraderie. But that's one thing. But I think also it teaches you that you're going to get setbacks and you've got to work through them. So you're going to have ups and downs. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. It's going to get you fitter. It's going to get you feeling better about yourself. And it's tough, and it's discipline, and it's structure. And I think that's the key word, actually, structure. I think in all of our lives, we need structure. You know, at the moment, if you want to sort of get up a bit later, or you want, you know, you can sort of, you know, you can cut corners a bit. You know, you've got to say, right, if I want to run this morning, I've got to get up before the homeschooling, or I've got to. So it, you know, that lesson of structure and discipline, you know, it's about yourself. And we all have days where we don't really want to do something. But I think what boxing does is if you don't turn up at the gym, you know, you might not get let back in, or you might not be able to spar with, you know, the young up and coming fighter, or, you know, you're going to be laughed at by the others. Look at Johnny when he went to Brendan's gym in Winkerbank, you know, all shapes and sizes, all backgrounds. They all went in there. As soon as they went for that gym door, no one was a star. Everybody was in the same boat. Everybody was singing nursery rhymes and embarrassing themselves in front of everybody, doing flips in the ring, falling over, you know. And I think that builds you inside. I think it's a fantastic thing. It's something that, you know, I didn't go through anything like this. You know, I came from a completely different path, and I look at fighters and I'm so proud of them, the way that they've come through situations, because they've had that bond together and they've had those goals. And it may be a goal just to have an amateur fight, or it might be a goal to become an English champion or a British champion. It doesn't really matter, but the trainers are there to set those goals. And there's so many trainers around, and they're not just amazing boxing trainers, they're amazing trainers in life. Yeah. And I tell you what, even if it doesn't work for you, there's an injury, there's a problem, you've got to retire, you can't keep up with it, you move areas, that's installed in you. And I think that they work so hard at sort of becoming almost life mentors, which is really needed at the moment. And yeah, it's fantastic. And it's great watching, you know, the story. Savannah Marshall, the only girl that went into her gym in Hartlepool, and it was all boys and they didn't have a changing area for her. And look at what she's achieved, because she's wanted it, you know, more than anything. She's dedicated herself. And I'm telling you, there have been real ups and downs. She was meant to get gold in London 2012. She froze. We had to rebuild her confidence, all of that. You know, but winning a world title last year with one of the best performances we saw in a British ring in 2020, just so satisfying when you know what somebody has been through. Yeah. You know, it's fantastic. And I think that's what boxing gives. It's honestly a sport like no other in terms of dedication, discipline and structure. But and it's amazing that even the ones that sort of don't really, you think, oh, there's no way he's going to stick at it, or she's going to stick at it, they're going to be back out on the streets, they're the ones that surprise you. And suddenly 3 years down the line, Shannon Courtney's lost 5-6 stone and she's fighting for title. It's just, it's brilliant. And that's the great thing. But I take with that, Natalie, I've had a lot of hard nights as well. You know, we've lost fighters over the years. Every injury, obviously every death affects us hugely. It is the risk. It is a risky sport. It's a dangerous sport. And it is a choice. You know, James Murray's death back in 1995, a year after I joined Sky, was horrendous for me. I'd spent 3 days with James before his tragic British title fight against Drew Doherty, and he was with his fiance and they were getting a new flat, and it was horrendous. And I didn't know I could carry on then, having been through that. But I went to visit James's mum shortly afterwards, a few weeks later, and I went to do an interview, and I sat in her house, and there's this big sort of almost haunting picture of James up on the wall. And I said to her, how can you watch boxing? How can you condone it after what happened to your son? And she looked me in the eyes and she said, boxing saved my son. Boxing saved my son from the streets and the estates of Glasgow. He would have died with a needle in his arm if it hadn't been for boxing. She said, I could not be prouder. And we went to his grave. Honestly, I take that with me every bad day I have in this sport, because if a mother can say that, then there is some good that this sport does.
Wow. Give me goosebumps. Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I chatted to Anthony Gogo on this podcast, and I didn't realise just how rough a ride he's had through the years. And, you know, there's a sense of injustice when I think about, you know, the fact that he wasn't able to fully realise his dreams, and that, you know, he admitted a sense of bitterness. And yet, much like Spencer, he said, I'd do it all again in a heartbeat. There was nothing like boxing that captured my heart, my soul, all my being like boxing. And it's incredible, actually. I think there's something about it sort of stripping you back, and it's just, you know,
ultimately it's gladiatorial, isn't it? And yeah. I think what fascinated me probably back in the Hagler, Hearns, Duran, Leonard era was there was a winner and there was a loser.
Yeah.
And you wanted to try and get the winner, but if the winner lost, you were devastated for that. Or, you know, if your man or whatever lost, you were devastated. And I think it's the thrill and you know, there's nothing like the heavyweight championship of the world. We know that. And, you know, we've been through ups and downs at Sky. You know, at times we've had great fights and we've worked with all the promoters. And then we came to a point where we were just literally trying to fill up leisure centres and the sport had sort of lost its sparkle. And then Eddie came along and, you know, we'd had Ricky Hatton, who was amazing and just fantastic and probably the best I've ever worked with in terms of accessibility. You know, he'd chuck his keys to his house to you, you know, and say, I'm just popping out. He said, make yourself a brew. I'll be back soon. You know, he was unbelievable. And I think, and we've worked with all the sort of greats, the Oscar De La Hoyas, you know, the Mike Tysons, the Lennox Lewis's over the years, Joe Calzaghe's, Carl Froch's, David Hayes, Amir Khan's, all sorts of different fighters. But I think that what we had was that we brought the sport back to, you know, the arenas and then obviously to the stadiums and Eddie and Matchroom and Sky's, you know, partnership. And, you know, we made it sexy again. You know, when I took over as head of boxing, I was about a decade ago. And I remember thinking, you know, it's still a pretty tradie sport. It can be big at times. It's still pretty tradie. So I sort of got my contacts book out and I, you know, having sort of loved all other sports and, you know, I found out that Andy Murray was a big boxing fan and Phil Taylor and Stuart Broad and Wayne Rooney and Steven Gerrard and all these sort of people in other sports. And I thought Rory McIlroy, another one, massive boxing fan. And I sort of thought I'll reach out to everybody and try and sort of get them to talk more about boxing. And so we tried to get it, you know, to be cool again so that, you know, people would come out to the arenas and sort of have a fun night and, you know, have the music and have a, you know, we saw what happened with the darts. They turned it from a, you know, 500 people, not even that, 200 people in a smoky pub to, you know, to thousands of people up at the Palace and everyone having a great time. And if it looks like everyone's having a great time and it's flying through the TV, you want to be there. So that's what we tried to do with boxing. And I think that it is a sport that is honestly working in it. It's 24/7. I mean, that's why AJ's team's 258/258. I mean, it's just all encompassing. You know, I speak to Eddie every single day. If we don't message each other, it just feels like something's wrong. And even if there's not a lot going on, there will be something happening within the next half an hour. You know, it keeps you on your toes. It can be the hardest sport to work on, but also the most rewarding because, you know, there are these dreams, there are these fighters and, you know, the likes of Anthony Ogogo, really good talent, you know, bronze in the Olympics and had the looks and everything, had everything going for him. But unfortunately, professional boxing can be difficult. It can be full of pitfalls. There are injuries, you know, fighters maybe are not quite as good as they were as an amateur, as a pro, or they don't quite get the luck, or they, you know, they don't know, it just doesn't work for them. And I think that, you know, there are these stories and you've sort of got to almost take what you can out of the sport. And then hopefully I'm very passionate about when it's over, what happens, you know, that sort of, and with every sportsman and woman, you know, most finish in their 30s, some have to finish in their teens, you know, with injury, some in their 20s, but you're pretty much done by, you know, top level sport by the time you're 40. You've got your whole life ahead of you. And I think if you haven't, it's not just achieve that money or the dreams. If you haven't sort of come out of it happy and almost like proud of what you've gone through, then there could be trouble ahead, because that's when the structure, and that's when you're trying to find that sort of, you know, the thrill again. And so many stories of fighters who, you know, they've the people around them have gone and they get lost and they don't have that, the camaraderie of the gym. They don't have that, that goal. They don't have the lights on them. They don't have that buzz. And I think that's a really tough area. And that's something that we've got to be really, you know, we owe it, you know, our fighters are the ones that get out there and they risk their lives, you know, for ultimately for our entertainment or for our fans' entertainment. And we need to make sure that not just in boxing, but in all sports that, you know, and I look at agents and I look at managers and people around them, and it's like, yes, everybody's in this for business, obviously, but I think it's really important to take, you know, sportsmen and women through into their sort of later life as well. I think it's really, I look at the scholars and, you know, hopefully, you know, even if they're not going to become a top at their game or win a gold medal or become, you know, Wimbledon champion, you know, they're going to have learned something through the scholarships system at Sky, where they've got the experience and the maturity to be able to, you know, utilize those skills in other areas. So it's great when you hear stories of sort of, you know, former sportsmen and women who look really happy. Darren Barker is a great example. Darren didn't make, you know, life-changing money. He did well. He became a world champion. He got a good defense. He, you know, he got paid okay, and that's fine. But he didn't make, you know, multi-millions. He didn't make life-changing money. So he knew he had to keep going. So, you know, he's opened gyms. He does work for Matchroom. And, you know, whenever you see him or Spencer, they've got a smile on their face. They've got, you know, that sort of spirit. And for both of them, okay, Darren was a world champion, but he, as I said, he didn't make the money that Nassim Hammed or Lennox Lewis or Ricky made. And for Spencer, he never even achieved his dreams. But I guess at 21, 22, he knew he wanted to stay in boxing, and he just became a great pundit and a great person in the sport. And I think it does come down to your desire and your passion, but that structure is really important. So, you know, boxing is a fantastic sport, but I think we also need to, you know, need to look after them. They're, you know, you've got to have a screw missing to get in that ring in the first place. You've got to have something slightly crazy about you, and you just want to make sure that craziness is just structured, and you know, we're there to support as well. And it's very hard when you're working in business and you know moving on to the next and all that. But I think it's really that's a really important side of it, that life after.
Very, very important point.
The world continues to evolve, and the new norm isn't fully clear yet. But what does remain constant is the core message from our friends at Bose. Stay calm, stay centered, and stay connected. Communication is key in everything we do, and goes a long way to nurturing both ourselves and our relationships with others. So continue to talk about what matters to you. And don't be afraid to block out unhelpful noise, or indeed to embrace silence, because doing both can be great. Some of the ways we work will have changed forever. Embrace that. Make those new ways work for you. Shape the new norm to suit you. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
And tell us a bit more about the mechanics of the partnership with Matchroom and Sky, because as you say, that was very much a big part of why boxing has come mainstream. Why, as you say, it is cool, you know, and you see white collar boxing charity matches popping up everywhere because people are catching this bug. And a lot of it does seem to come down to that. Why does that work so well? Why does it work well for Sky, for Matchroom, and most importantly, the fans?
I think that, I've been lucky enough to work with pretty much all the promoters that we've had over the last, you know, 25, 30 years. You know, I've worked with Don King, with Bob Arum, with Frank Warren for many years, with Frank Maloney, now Kelly, with Ricky Hatton, with Mick Hennessy, with Matchroom, obviously, for the whole time. So, you know, there's huge amounts, PBC in the States, Top Rank. There's loads of you know, great promotional outfits out there. But I think that with us, I think we, you know, Matchroom and Sky have something special. You know, we go way back. You know, when I first started, the first show I did was a Matchroom show. It was a young fighter at that time called Francis Ampofo. He was in with Darren Fifield. I think it was the British flyweight title at York Hall. And, you know, Francis was one of Matchroom's sort of favourite fighters. And at the time, they had a few big names. They had the likes of Eamon Loughran and Herbie Hyde and one or two others. And, you know, we worked there on the sort of, you know, we worked on the Eubank World Tour as well. And that was, you know, senior Eubank. But I think there was a special bond with Matchroom. And then we did the Fishermania and we were all sort of thrown into that. And then they had this contract to do the other sports, the darts, the ping pong, the snooker, all these sort of, you know, sports that they did, that they shone and they made into, you know, to really attractive TV and entertainment sports. And they deserve a lot of credit. But I think it was at a time when Sky probably had the best people from BBC, ITV, et cetera, joining Sky. You know, we were the enemy in those days. Let's not forget, we took the Premier League away. You know, we had, you know, we were the enemy. I mean, terrestrial, where's it all gone? BBC, ITV, you know, the papers weren't writing about us. And in a way, it was, boxing became a bit of a niche sport for a long time. But I think we learned a great deal working with all those different promoters. But there was something about Matchroom and about that sort of loyalty. And I think the fact that, you know, that we were in bed in many ways, not just in boxing. And I'd always heard Eddie was a fight fan. And I think we came to a point where Frank Warren wanted to sort of start his own boxing channel. So he went off to Box Nation. And Barney Francis was a huge boxing fan, our former MD. And he thought, you know, look, we've probably got to get with one promoter now and sort of, you know, really just, we were up and down the country, you know, production costs were huge, halls were pretty empty, fights weren't great. Yes, there were a few big shows, of course, that the promoters put on, but there was a lot of sort of, you know, generic stuff on a Friday night. It wasn't capturing the imagination like boxing could. And I think it just got us all together. And I think we tried something different to sort of have less shows, stop filling arenas, as I said, you know, sort of broadening it out, trying to get the sort of casual fans in and making it fun again, boxing. Boxing's not a sport you laugh about. It's a very hard sport. But, you know, there's ring walks, there's entertainment. We'd seen what Chris Eubank, what Nassim Hammed had done, you know, the entries that, you know, and the ones like Mike Tyson just walked in, ripped off the stuff, and, you know, he was the fighting man. So you had all these different characters. And as I said, I think it is all about narrative. And things just fell for us. London 2012 was huge. Katie Taylor, Nicola Adams, Anthony Joshua, Anthony Ogogo, you know, all coming through, Luke Campbell winning gold. That sort of inspired us again. Then, hey, Froch and Groves, we got this mouth-watering sort of rivalry with these two guys who really hated each other, a bit like the sort of old days with Ben and Eubank. And, you know, they were drawing thousands and, you know, into stadiums at Old Trafford and then millions on ITV. And we had a chance then with a story here to grow it. And then they had the first terrific fight, controversial in Manchester, bomb, let's go again, let's do a rematch, let's have this rivalry. And, you know, Barry's like, let's go to Wembley, and I'm like, what, Wembley Stadium, are you mad? I mean, it's like, we'll get 20,000 in, max 30,000. And you know what, when you've got a story and you've got great promoters, and Eddie, like Barry, you know, the ultimate promoter, you know, he's polished all these sports, he's brought it up. Eddie, you know, chip off the old block, and he's different. He's not that sort of, you know, the financial accountancy mind that Barry had. You know, Barry will be careful, very careful. Eddie will just roll that dice a bit more, and Barry's got to keep him under wraps sometimes. But Eddie had that drive and that passion and that want to succeed. You know, a lot of people look at him and say the fast car, that, you know, the silver spoon, all that. Do you know what? He can't help where he came from, right? He's the son of Barry Hearn. But I tell you what, Eddie Hearn works harder than anybody. He works night and day. He loves it. And he's dedicated to it. And he's passionate about it. And that is what drew me to him and Barney to him. And we then became a partnership. And instead of a sort of promoter saying, right, this is what's happening, or we're saying we want this, it became a conversation. It became a relationship. It became a friendship. And yeah, of course, there's times when I say to Eddie, look, I don't agree with you. I think we should do that. We need to do that. There's times that he says, Adam, look, come on, you know, we've got to do that. We haven't got the money. You don't pay us anything. There's all of those conversations. But what it has been is a relationship, a partnership. And it's not just those big nights at Wembley Stadium with AJ and Klitschko or the huge stars. It's also, you know, the little matches we make, you know, the undercards of Fight Camp, the innovation of that, the working together. And I think actually through these difficult times and the boxing bubbles that we've had at the back end of last year and the Matchroom Garden, you know, we've come up with new ideas and we're pushing boundaries again. And it's hard, but we're trying to find a way. And what I love about Eddie and Matchroom and Frank Smith and all those guys, they're like our lot. They're like the Sky lot. They want to do it. They're passionate. They're really good, and they're team players. And I think it's a great knit. And I, you know, long may it continue, because you know, there's not a day. I mean, my wife will say, you know, God, he's on the phone to Eddie again, bloody Eddie. You know, honestly, probably I do speak to him more. I mean, we have that, and I think it's really special. And of course, while, you know, I'm very much a Sky man and he's very much a Matchroom man, I think it's really important that when we needed each other, we were there for each other, and we've grown together. So I think it's been one of the great partnerships in sports broadcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone listening to this who hasn't listened to my podcast with Eddie should do, because he's such, much like you, a great talker, and he brings the sport alive for anyone who's not a convert already. Tell us about the fight that we all want to see. AJ Tyson Fury, is it going to happen? Can you 100% say, obviously COVID restrictions, bearing those in mind, is it going to happen 2021?
I learned a long time probably not to say 100% anything's going to happen in boxing. But I will tell you that I'm pretty confident this fight will happen in 2021. Obviously, Anthony Joshua has always wanted to become the undisputed champion. He was derailed when he lost to Andy Ruiz. He went straight back into a rematch. His resume is phenomenal, you know, from becoming Olympic gold medalist with such a short amateur career to winning a world title. And after the sort of pretty facile fight with Charles Martin, you know, he lined them all up. They're unbeaten. Dominic Brazil, Joseph Parker, fights like that, obviously the Klitschko one. You know, he's Andy Ruiz straight into a rematch. You know, he ducks nobody, and he's always wanted to fight Tyson Fury. I've been sure about that. Tyson Fury, obviously we've worked closely together in the past. We covered the Klitschko win, but then he's been on BT a lot. But I reached out to him, you know, during lockdown. We've been communicating a lot more, and I'm absolutely convinced that he wants it. I'm convinced that AJ wants it. And when two fighters really want something to happen, and they know the money that's involved, obviously, but they want to find out, you know, who is the best fighter, the best heavyweight on the planet. They've both got their own opinion on that. But it's a fight that I think will happen. There are hurdles, as always with boxing. There's a lot of politics, or politricks, as Lennox Lewis used to call it, to get through. And those have got to be dealt with. Alexander Usyk is the WBO mandatory challenger. Usyk is entitled to fight Anthony Joshua, so that situation's got to be looked at. Also, Deontay Wilder, his team, Shelley Finkel, good friend of mine, wise old fox. He's obviously will want that fight with Fury, and there's litigation going on there, which I don't know too much about. So, you know, ultimately, I'm not sure whether it will be for all the belts or whatever, and I'm not sure whether it will be next, because, you know, they could have to fight Usyk and Wilder in the meantime. But I think, from what I've been talking to AJ's team, to obviously AJ himself, to Tyson, and I think obviously Eddie regularly, and they want to keep it sort of fairly quiet and fairly close now, but it's pretty much there. It's pretty much agreed, a two-fight deal. So there are a few, you know, I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed as ever with these things. There's no venue, obviously. They've had a lot of interest from all around the world. I think it's probably a fight that will end up in the Middle East, you know, I guess, probably May, June. It would be great if it was at Wembley or Tottenham. You know, we looked around Tottenham. We were going to have the Pulev fight at Spurs, which is an incredible stadium. And you know, Daniel Levy, we were there last summer, and it didn't happen. So I'd love to go back to some, although I'm a massive Liverpool fan and I want to take boxing to Anfield, and trust me, I'm trying with Billy Hogan and the team, trying to get boxing at Anfield, but we just need the right fight. Maybe all the Smith brothers can fight there one day. We've got to retain the Premiership title first. Anyway, so we want to go to Anfield, but we want to go to Spurs. It's a great stadium, and obviously Wembley is the iconic national stadium. So, you know, one of those, the fight could happen in. But unfortunately, we're not going to get crowds of that magnitude, I don't think, in time for May or June. So that really rules out Britain as the first choice. It's going to be a two-fight deal. So I think that we'll probably go abroad first of all, and then, you know, have maybe the second fight in the UK. That'll be great. So I can't say 100% it's going to happen, but I know that talks are going well. I expect some news in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And there's lots of other things, broadcasting deals, you know, Tyson Fury with BT, Sky obviously have AJ, you know, ESPN, DAZN in America. There's lots of things that have to be knitted together. You know, it took 5 years to make Mayweather Pacquiao, and HBO and Showtime just broadcast it. We all know 5 years too late. They should have had three of them by then. This is the time to make Joshua and Fury. Both of them are around about their peaks. You know, both of them are world heavyweight champions. We hope that all the treasure, all the belts are on the line. But even if they're not, does anyone really matter? We need to see these two in a ring. It's the perfect time. Boxing's in a great space. The world needs it. It's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to happen in 2021. I can't give you a date, a time, or a venue. I'm not 100%, but I'm probably in the 90s that this fight will happen this year. So I think that's great news. And we'll find out, you know, whether Tyson Fury is the man he says he is. He's obviously amazingly talented, brilliant boxer on his peak. We'll probably start favourite. But Anthony Joshua, I tell you what, the way he mixed it up against Pulev, you know, the way he's learning his skills, he's improving on that. He's got the power to knock out any heavyweight in the world. There'll be a lot of people backing AJ in that fight. And if they have two of them, we could even have a third one. And to be honest, what does it really matter? One loses, the other loses. Remember Bo Holyfield? You know, you go back to Ali and Frazier and those great heavyweight battles. Let's have two, three of them. Let's entertain the public. This fight needs to be made. And I tell you what, I'm going to get off this podcast, I'm going to text AJ and Tyson Fury and say, come on, guys, let's do it.
Oh, I love it. You're firing me up. This is brilliant. So, I mean, they're two very different propositions, two different, very different boxers. Fury just seems so awkward. He doesn't, you know, AJ's obviously the poster boy and looks incredible, this British hero. But Fury's such a different, you know, to your earlier point, much earlier point, I feel that Fury's popularity just soared when people knew a bit more about his backstory and who he was as a person. Because all we saw before that were the sensationalist headlines, you know, about his clunky, unfortunate, un-PC, unkind comments. But actually, there's a real kindness to him. I absolutely love the behind the scenes with the Fury family. You couldn't help but love them.
I think, Natalie, it's the mental health. I think it's all about. I think it's the fact that he strips himself bare and look at me. You know, I'm every day is going to be a challenge. I think that's terrific. I think he has this persona which is attractive, and he's the bad guy, and you know, it's pantomime stuff. I mean, do you remember with the Klitschko and the Batman outfit was just he's just genius in it, and also he gets in the ring and he is, you know, a great fighter. I thought his. I went over to Vegas for the Wilder rematch, and you know, I didn't know who was going to win. And I thought Wilder could knock him out. I thought Fury won the first fight, but I thought if he won, he'd win on points. He destroyed him, and I thought that was one of the great performances by any British fighter on foreign soil. You know, Anthony Joshua won that epic against Vladimir Klitschko, that epic. So they've both, and Fury's been out and beating Klitschko when he wasn't supposed to in Germany as well. So they both proved so much. And as you say, it's the poster boy. It's the man that every woman in Britain wants to meet. I mean, let's be honest, you know, whether it's my 14-year-old daughter that's like looking at, you know, up at AJ, or it's my mum, you know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Everyone loves AJ, right? And so he's got that. He's got the sort of the casual, almost like non-sports fans in a way. Whereas Tyson has got the boxing hardcore, because they love the fact that he's the sort of, you know, the character that he is, that he's the pure, you know, boxer, that he's gone through all of this. And as you said, the story has been great. I think when you've got a narrative and you've got two such polar opposites in style and in personality, I mean, it's gold, isn't it? Yeah. I just cannot wait to start working on this fight. And I just really hope, fingers crossed, that they get this over the line soon.
Oh, so do I. I tell you what, I'm going to go and do some pad work right now. I finished by telling you that my five-year-old came back very frustrated the other day that he wasn't at school and wants to see his mates, want to run around like a little nutter. And he put his little boxing gloves on and my husband did some pad work with him. And he just released. And I feel in a way, just having this conversation that I've released, so enjoyed your passion. It's palpable. And I feel that I'm excited to attack my day now, having spoken to you. So thank you so much.
No problem, Natalie. We've got lots of good boxing to come, probably kicking off in mid-February. So it's going to be a fantastic year. Really excited about, you know, obviously AJ Fury, but all the others as well. Women's boxing booming. Katie Taylor back soon. It's going to be fantastic, I think, 2020. We just have to, you know, keep everybody, you know, patient and healthy and safe. And we just get on with what we can during these tough few weeks ahead. And hopefully with the vaccines and, you know, everything will look a lot brighter by the back end of 2021. But if we can get some of these fights on and get some crowds there, that will be terrific entertainment. And it'd be great for the fighters who've been so patient and have done so brilliantly, you know, keeping themselves together during such a difficult time.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Everybody needs it more than ever right now. And you have been such a pleasure to talk to, as I knew you would. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you so much, Adam, for your time. You are an incredibly busy man, so I appreciate you taking an hour or so out of your schedule to talk to me and hopefully inspire future generations of budding commentators and broadcasters. Loads more great guests on the way here on In The Pink, supported by Bose, including one Eddie Izzard. That is coming up next week, and I know you are going to love hearing from Eddie as she embarks on a quite incredible challenge of 31 marathons in 31 days, including 31 stand-up shows. That is what she's doing right now, and we can join her as she takes on that mission to raise loads of money and make humanity great again, which is the strapline for the campaign. So make sure you join us next week for that. Make sure you tag in friends here on Instagram and tell us who else you want to hear from on In The Pink. Add the hashtag Bose, and some goodies could be on the way to you very soon. Thanks for your company. Hugely appreciated as ever. And stay strong. I know it's uncertain times, but we've got each other's backs. We are here for one another, and we are certainly stronger together. So thank you, Adam, and thank you all for your company here on In The Pink.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.